I'm good, Mike. Mike, I'm going to email the organizers today and see what they say about that. I'll be in touch with everybody on the ESPRA CFAST symposium later today or tomorrow.
Okay, no worries. I mean, I'm happy to do what I can to make it happen because it's only a couple of hour flight from here, so easy.
Well, we'll see what they say and they want to do.
I'd find it very easy if they didn't facilitate that.
Okay. Jennifer's there, Annika's there, Christine Austin, Christy Petrenko, Cristiano. I didn't see, there he is. Claire. Why? Joanne.
I'm there.
You're here. Jeff's here, Johan, Scott. Ken Jones is there, Miguel, Sarah. Tatiana, Leah, Tina. Oh, Sarah's there. Tina, Rajesh is there. Mike said he's there. Tom Donaldson's here. John Hannigan's here. Dan there? I don't see Dan.
He just messaged he's going to be a little late.
James Reynolds. Sarah Joe's here. Bill Dunty's here.
In Ed, it's Michael. I'm on without camera today.
Oh, okay. I had you as unlikely.
I am completely unlikely, but I'm here.
You're there. All right. So it's probably going to be a somewhat abbreviated call today. And I've asked Mike with this, if CFAST, if it continues, one of the issues that we're going to have is trying to implement some of the tools that we have developed and get them out into the real world and see how they function there. And a lot of the projects are utilizing or contributing to Mike's research. So I asked Mike if he could present a little bit today on his findings and its how close it might be to being utilized in clinics. At least I hope that's what was conveyed. Mike has another meeting, so we're going to start this meeting off with Mike's presentation so that he can get to his other meeting.
Thanks, Ed. Parveen is my mother-in-law, by the way, if you're wondering. I just see my screen. Okay. Did everyone see all right? We're good?
Yep.
Brilliant. So yeah, I thought it'd be good to kind of touch on a few things. Over the last few weeks, obviously, for the CFAST 5, I've badgered a lot of you about collecting 3D images. And I kind of want to stress on the importance of having a lot of data for what we do so that it's not done in vain. And so you feel like, you know, it's contributing towards something. I'm going to give a bit of an update. A lot of this, I think you'd have already seen in the last CFAST at the end of year update, but I'm kind of going to recap on it and add a few things and kind of show the future direction and stuff I outlined in the CFAST 5 proposal. So face screen is our software, as you well know, that we're going to use hopefully for clinical utilization. And the four main sort of areas of points that I want to try and address on it is we want to objectively identify cardinal features and minor facial anomalies. We want to try and calculate some sort of FASD likelihood score, some kind of risk score from the facial analysis, and then provide a validated and accessible toolkit. And when I mean accessible, I mean it really has to be in the hands of clinicians now. We've done a lot of work throughout CFAST 4, which I'm hoping to then needs translating into as Ed said, into a place where it's clinically utilizable and actually can be can be useful rather than just cool stuff that we've done. So that's my real goal for the next stage of all of this, is just actually getting it into the hands of people. And it's really to, you know, on the whole, it's to provide the facial side of things. It's definitely just to provide clinicians with additional feedback and provide some sort of screening methods. And camera wise, you would have seen these low cost methods. So when I'm referring to accessible, I'm really focused on low cost stuff. So I would have badgered a few of you taking 3D images to also, if you're using this camera, to also use the iPhone as well. So utilizing Morpheus Q's Bella scanning system with the rotation around the face, because that gives a nice image. But we need to determine now how good those images are. And these two cameras on the left here being the gold standard, we can get pretty decent results from the low cost cameras as well, the Bellas and the iPhone. The question is the geometric resolution around areas like the philtrum enough for us to utilize our tools? But if not, then how can we utilize them in different ways, like how GANs is utilizing images, and hopefully build on what GANs is doing and contribute to enabling access from Morpheus Q to our tools. So assessing how well these cameras perform is really important, which is why I've been stressing to people, if you're gonna take 3D images, I've been begging to take them with iPhone as well as the handheld camera, if possible. So it's really valuable data that you'll be collecting if you'll be taking them from both cameras. So currently, with our clinical software, the inputs are a 3D image, some manually placed landmarks, 24 in total, and then you just need age, sex, ethnicity, and then whatever request you want. So what piece of information you want to get back from it, whether it's some analysis of PFL or a heat map or whatever. So you have that request that goes in there as well. Where recent advances with our machine learning techniques have hopefully going to do away with the manually placed landmarks. I mean, it is a matter of implementing that into our system to allow that into our pipeline, so it can just free flow automatically. So you would have seen this one before. Currently, we've got on an Oxford server our toolkit linked with an API which you can access through an internet, through either a web-based through a browser, or directly from an app by simply calling, throwing in a request and getting back a response. So we're trying to implement the automated PFL at the moment into that. We've got things like the discrimination testing and the secondary feature assessment like midface, hyperplasia, et cetera. Using the iPhone, so the outputs you're getting, so that's the inputs, the outputs you're getting from it are in the form of a report. This is an app I developed just to test our server side. And we've got the cardinal features that we're now analyzing, the PFL and the lip filter prediction. That's something I've not actually shown you guys. And of course, we've got our other things like the score of midfacial hyperplasia. We can calculate the volume of the mandible, provide an interactive heat map, and then we can do all sorts of control FAS discrimination testing to see how relatively close a face is to either a control or FAS. The thing is, what we're trying to do is, from all these things that I present, and the thing we really need to understand is, it's a sum of its parts. We need to understand all of these things in a kind of multimodal fashion to try and understand how do they all contribute together to the FASD. And that's something we're still kind of working on, but getting ever closer. But doing this sort of stuff takes a lot of data. So all the data we've been collecting in CFAS in previous phases, we've got probably close to 2,000 3D images at least, certainly the ones that I'm utilizing, hugely valuable for this side of things. And so the recent addition is lip filtrum analysis that I've not shown you. So what I did is I constructed from a model of 470 faces, extracted the lip filtrums by isolating the regions and computing means for each of the Lifometer scores 1 to 5. And this is So this is 200 or so of them are output exposed and the rest are controls. So the output exposed and controls spread across one to five as you would expect. The question is, if we morph through those means, we can see how they change. The question is, if you take an individual that we'll be doing with this and try and determine how close to 1 to 5 is that individual, it's very difficult for a number of reasons. One of them being is the numbers in each of the Lipper meter scores. If you look at 1 and 5, we have literally 1 making that and 5 making that mean at the end there. 1 and 5 means we can't do anything with those numbers. But doing a multi-class classification between 2, 3, and 4 didn't really bode well either. We were kind of unable to determine whether or not a filtrum was 2 or 3. It was hard to distinguish between 2 and 3. It was hard to distinguish between 3 and 4, but not as bad. So the way I'm approaching it now is I'm literally turning it back into a binary method of smooth or not smooth by grouping 1 to 3 and 4 to 5. And we get more power because we've got larger numbers on each side of smooth and not smooth. And we found that was getting closest mean classifications as an area under the curve of 90% accuracy. And if you apply SVM classifications, support vector machines, you get a 91% accuracy telling whether or not a filtrum is smooth or not smooth. So there's room for improvement. This is on a Caucasian model, so we need to make ethnic specific models to cover a broader spectrum of the population. So that's one of the first cardinal feature recognition. The other one I've shown you before is the automated PFL that we've designed specifically to target landmarks on the eyes. And this is coming up extremely accurate compared to manual 3D annotation. These sit in line with the face-based normative values from 3Ds, but seem to stray away from the ruler measurement, but in a kind of predictive manner. So they're following the same trajectory, just on a different level. So that's something will be interesting. So currently I'm writing up a paper with Raja on using his data set, comparing our automated methods to the 2D methods of analysis using the Susan Ashley's 2D assessment FAS photographic tool. It'll be a very carefully worded paper, I assure you, but it will be comparing what we can find and how we can find PFL and filtrum measures using our stuff automatically compared to what you do using the 2D software. So yeah, that's currently in the workings. There we go. Right. That's gone too far. Okay, so yeah, error-wise, we're looking pretty good in terms of proximity to manually replaced 3D landmarks. So taking everything a step forward, the thing we're really trying to do now is, we've got the server hosted on an Oxford server, which is great and everything, but you can't use real world data on that unless you've got the correct security protocols in place for the actual patient data. So pushing forward, what we're trying to do is get everything put onto a HIPAA compliant server. And so the idea here is you're taking an image either from a web-based application on a computer, from either a stored image or directly from a camera, and it goes into the system. And now what we want to do is be able to store those images both within the server and externally with a CFAS, and access CFAS data as well, which would be great. And it simply works in the same way, sends a request, get a response. And also we want to integrate our HIPAA compliant server into Morpheus Q, which I've discussed with GANs, so when you're scanning using Morpheus Q in the clinics and stuff, the image will go straightly, securely, directly to the storage if requested, on this server, that we can then put in requests to do analysis on those images stored on that server, on that database. That's that bit. The next bit, ongoing future work, I'm really, really excited about doing, is developing deep learning models, which take into account the neurocognitive data as well. And this is the beauty about having an architecture that looks like this, where you've got everything stored and everything running on a cloud process servers that you can send a response or send a 3D face and some neurocognitive measures like from the Brain Online or FASD tree software that will go into a pre-built network. The idea is that having the facial features, doing a feature extraction on the facial features and a feature extraction on the neurocognitive features and combining them in this kind of multimodal model will give an additional power to our classification. So instead of just what we've largely been doing is focusing on FAS discrimination testing, but we really need to do the full spectrum. And I think that's going to take more than just facial features. And so with this, with our face brain work, where we were taking brain prints, faking prints, combining them together in a kind of multimodal approach, building these combined models, you've now got the power of not only the face, you've got the power of the cognitive differences as well. And you're extracting the relevant features using this network that can then create some higher level features that you can use for classification. So that's something I'm really keen on now focusing and getting stuck into with Sarah, and very much looking forward to it. So that's about it. Sorry if you've already heard a lot of that before.
Thanks, Mike. Are there any questions from anybody? I have one. In your comparison of the 3D palpebral fissure length to the ruler, is you have a kind of very consistent difference. And I'm wondering, in terms of percentiles, so when you have to pick a percentile per kid, since the ruler uses a different chart than the face space would, are the percentiles comparable?
That's the next thing that needs to be checked, because I'm hoping they are, given those trend lines are very much in on the same sort of trajectories. And I'd imagine they are, but that's something we're addressing in the paper I'm writing at the moment. So in the results for the using Raja's clinic software, but that will be comparing the percentiles with, because we'll be comparing the raw values and the percentiles with the 2D facial stuff, but we do need to also apply that to the data we've already got.
Then the next question is, the Bellis camera seemed to provide more details than the iPhone camera at one point in time, not so much on what you showed today. Is the Bellis camera still available or no? I mean, because that's the only one that'll work on the Android right now. And most of the world uses Android, so.
They've discontinued. They let me buy one and pay for their development fees, and then they discontinued it pretty much immediately after, which I wasn't particularly pleased about. But they've actually got a new system out, which is like another low cost system, but it's not quite as compact, but it's highly detailed. Again, I'll just quickly find it. It's called the Arc. This I think comes in at around $3,000 or somewhere in the region of that. It's tons cheaper than the big ones. And I think all it is like a series of the little ones stuck together in an array. I don't know, can you see that on there?
Yeah.
So yeah, this is another low cost system. It would be cool to get your hands on one of these if it's worth it. I don't know
it's low cost, but it wouldn't be as readily available as the Android or iPhone. That was one of your objectives was ready availability broadly.
That's it. For sure. And I think that's the focus that we should have now. I as much as I love the really nice high quality cameras, it's a question of, do you need that extra detail? And can you utilize the detail you can already get from the iPhone depth cameras? And I think to an extent, yes, we certainly can. And if it's all you need, then there's no point in these. But that needs to be validated.
So I think if I recall some of the language that you know you all had used in this group as you know you were moving in this direction, it was to increase access and availability. You know, you were asking what was good enough, you know, at least to get that first indicator. Good enough to say that this person needs to be should be screened more completely clinically. Is that still accurate? What you're looking for?
Yes, it is. And also good enough to provide more information to a clinician if they may want it, that may help their decision in making a clinical diagnosis.
So if I can follow up just briefly, early on in your presentation, you showed the number of using, I think it was the lipometer, the number of cases that you had that you were assessing, and there was an N of one for the one. And you grouped them together, you know, so that you had four and five together. And that was about 100 or so out of the 500, I think.
Yeah.
Can you remind me where that sample came from?
That's existing CFAS data, and it's
CFAS. Okay, so yeah, it's not general population rates and the like, right?
No, that's all CFAS data. So that's isolating just Caucasians from the CFAS data. We do actually have a lot more data to put into those models, and that's what I'll do next. But the distribution amongst the lipometer scores remains very much the same as what I showed you there.
So lumping together the four and five together with the one through three not only gave you greater N on either side of your divide, but four and five is still what's being used as the cutoff for indicating FASD or an FAS-like face. Is that? And so even though you might be losing some resolution, you're not losing significantly in precision and identification?
That was my understanding as well, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, because that's, you know, that's the interest, isn't it?
So of the 202 alcohol exposed folks that you had in that, right?
Yeah.
Were the 100 that were in that category all alcohol exposed?
I think about 90% of them were. The alcohol exposed trickled into two and three, but in very small numbers. Well, not small numbers, actually, quite large numbers.
Yeah. So the distinction between that cutoff got a little tricky.
Mm. There were significantly more three VA with threes than there were twos. But yeah.
I want to just follow up on John's question about the availability to increase capacity. And that's the reason I brought up the Bellis camera, is because 90% of the world uses Android phones. Mm-hmm. And we have an iPhone app. So it's great in the US, but it's going to be less available globally as we try to move forward. So getting a low-cost camera on an Android operating system would be a big plus in terms of increasing global capacity.
Yeah. And the beauty about what we're doing is the architecture, the kind of complexity sits elsewhere. So if you've got the camera, it's just a matter of getting something to ping the image to where it needs to be. So if you do have another implementation on a different device, this is totally platform independent. So yeah, so wherever it comes from, the image is fine. And whatever camera modality it comes from is also fine, because the way we've done the automated landmarking stuff is to be able to accept anything.
Any other questions? Okay, all right. So thank you, Mike, and good luck later on.
All right, thank you.
All right, Sarah, would you like to give us an update on the publication committee?
Yes, I would. So we didn't have any concept proposals. We've had a bit of a lull since April. I mean, I know I personally can say that it's fallen off my radar. So I feel like if it's fallen off my radar, it's probably fallen off everyone's radar. And so I just want to encourage you to submit your concept proposals so we can keep track of those. We did have one paper manuscript submission that we submitted. It's been a while since we've had a report. So this paper has actually gotten a revise and resubmit. So we're working on that, and we're going to resubmit that hopefully, definitely before the end of August. But we did get some post-acceptance forms. We got one from Johan, and he also provided a very pretty slide, which I can't explain, but I thought I'd share it with you because he shared it with us. So if we have a minute, Johan could tell us about that, unless you want me to move on.
Oh, let's see what, Johan, what do you got there?
Yeah, so it's a really exciting finding about what alcohol is doing at the level of the cell, and it's the cellular protrusion. So up there, the little green blobs up in the upper left, those are all individually labeled cells that are undergoing convergent extension movements during gastrulation. And then these little colored things underneath it, it's just a representation of the total number and length of those. And so in that wild type, you see that there's this highly polarized little green ones pointing out, and that's the direction a cell is moving. And then as you move down to an alcohol-treated Bengal 2 mutant, those are highly disrupted. They actually have a lot more cellular protrusions, but they're not oriented in the direction that the cell ought to be migrating. And so we're pretty excited about this. It's telling us, we think, that alcohol is doing something to the basic cellular machinery, the cytoskeleton, that allows a cell to undergo appropriate migration.
Great. Thank you. Great. Sorry, I didn't warn you that I was going to call on you to discuss it, but thank you.
I hope that made sense.
Yeah. We had another paper that, so Jill and I both sort of regularly search for CFAS papers, and we had this paper that came up as well that was supported by CFAS through Scott Parnell. So I thought I'd share that with you. But I don't have any like links or anything, but we'll get that from Scott later. And then we had one paper from Claudia Teshi, I guess, and Dan Savage, looking at, I can't tell from the title what they're looking at. Global network segregation and integration in adolescence. I thought I'd share that with you. So I think that's it for this week. And so I just want to encourage you again to continue to submit your concept proposals. And as your papers get submitted and accepted, to just keep us in the loop on that. Let us know if we can help. Thank you.
Any questions for Sarah?
I had another paper submitted, or not submitted, accepted recently. We just have not yet gotten the post-acceptance form filled out yet for technical reasons. I don't know, I've been having trouble accessing it for some reason. So.
Oh, okay. Well, let us know if we can, and I guess Jill would be the best person, but let us know if we can help get that process for you.
Okay. But it was a co-mouse and fish paper that was really cool.
Oh, cool. Great. Thank you.
Thanks. All right, Leah, on the data access committee.
No one has asked for data, although I've been in contact with someone in Belgium who works with Peter Klaes, and he might ask for the 3D imaging landmarks.
Okay. All right. Anyone have any really exciting new data that they would like to tell us about from their project? Miguel or Ken, Claire,
I do.
Who does?
Sarah.
Sarah, go.
So we, as part of Brain Online, we include a very brief behavior checklist. It's 14 items, just yes or no questions. And we're in the process of a bigger goal is to try to streamline our decision tree, which is now called the FASD tree. So to shorten the involvement so that the parent, so it's not so much of a burden, it could be more easily and quickly and more cheaply completed. So we looked at this 14 item behavioral screen. We have about, I think, somewhere between 80 and 100 subjects. And we were able to accurately distinguish over in the somewhere in the 90 percentage range. So we're really excited about that because it that's just looking at that 14 item behavioral screen alone. And we haven't yet, the next step is to look at it in conjunction with the other tree measures. So, you know, we think we'll be able to streamline our tree a little bit.
Right. Let's see. Joanne, Christy, Cristiano,
yeah. Scott. I don't have anything new right now.
No. Come on. Jeff?
I've been on vacation.
Isn't that when you're supposed to write?
No. I will report that we are basically almost done with our time to MRI scans. So that's been going better than expected. We've exceeded our targets already for the 18-month follow-ups on both alcohol exposed and controls. And we're just trying to grab a few stragglers, and then we'll be able to start some of those analyses.
Okay. Tina or Raj?
Well, this is progress. I think we finally, with Leah's help, resolved the issue of being able to get the school age testing actually entered into the database. So yay, finally, Claire, Julie, and I will be able to actually look at those 110 kids now who have been tested. So that will be progress that was sort of delayed that we'll be able to do in the next couple of months.
Tina and I just got out a grant at the same time as the CFAS grant, hopefully with a new population of pregnant women in the San Diego region.
Good. All right. I don't think Susan Smith's on. Annika, any updates?
I think the only thing for us is that as of last night, it looks like we have the MTA in place finally. So we'll be moving forward.
Okie doke. All right. Any words of wisdom, questions from the SAB or NIAAA?
Well, I think it should not be missed that you guys had worked very, very hard this summer and submitted the new application for CFAS 5. And I know that it was very difficult for everybody. And congratulations on getting that done.
Thanks, John. You kind of ruined my ending, but it's all right.
Well, too bad.
anyone else? Sarah Jo, she's...
Well, what John said, which is what you would have said, but too bad for you.
Yeah, it's all right. Bill? James, any comments or questions?
No questions. I would share John and Sarah Jo's comments and maybe the ones that you're about to share. Writing applications during the summer isn't great. Unfortunately, that's the timetable that we had that was presented to ourselves. And so thank you. And thanks to the SAB as well for all their efforts.
Yeah, a lot of people worked really very hard on this. And thanks, and I certainly appreciate all the help I got in trying to put this thing together. So that's good. And I wanted to hear it from Tom because he's got something going on in the works with some legislation that maybe people might be interested in and supporting.
That's right, Ed. The FASD Respect Act. There've been over 100 virtual meetings with experts, advocates, and staff, and many, probably two dozen members themselves. Christy, thanks very much for serving as the expert on many New York meetings. I think Jeff, you've probably done some with Proof Alliance. And if anyone is interested in doing that, it's a good position because you can talk about the science and your work. Don't have to be an advocate, so to speak, as those folks join those meetings. So, you know, we're optimistic that we're going to get, we already have been a lot further in the process than in the past. There's a bump up in some FASD dollars at CDC that's been in the House, it's included in the House Appropriations Committee report. So we'll keep at it. And Ed, I'll probably get in touch with you in not too long to see if we may be doing some virtual briefings on the House and Senate side. So Ed, I'll talk with you to see if you might be able to do that or have suggestions. And also to be unveiled next month, NOFAS is going to be changing its name to FASD United. There's a lot of rationale behind that. I won't go into it now, but we'll be describing that on our social media platforms, obviously our website, and in the weekly roundup that I hope you all get.
Okay, and that was just for educational purposes. We're not allowed to lobby on here, so just educational that you know about it. And I didn't want Bill to cringe too much. All right, any last minute stuff? Any comments, concerns, questions?
Ed, can I make a plug for the virtual 5K that for Run FASD that's going on in the month of September?
Can I virtually run it?
Yes, if you want. A self-advocate with FASD from New York State came up with the idea in partnership with Jen Wisdahl, who's on the NOFAS policy team, and then another woman who does podcasts. And all the proceeds from the race go to support NOFAS. And so I've been trying to encourage the research community to also sign up on the website, and you can do it in however you want, but it really kind of supports and bring awareness. And I think with all the work that families and people with FASD have done to generate and be generous with their time to support our work, it'd be nice to show up and support them as well.
Welcome, Dan. Thank you, Christy, and maybe people will get involved.
Christy, I'm about to send out that email as soon as we're done here. It'll have all the information for people.
As long as I really don't have to run it, I can do it virtually.
You can break it up in multiple occasions and count your golf course movement if that helps.
I haven't played golf in a week, so it's been a very sad experience. Anyone else?
Hey, Ed,
yeah.
Just real quick. I put in the chat a link to a media advisory that we and NICHD issued yesterday on a new publication from the PASS network looking at the risk of late stillbirth related to prenatal alcohol and smoking. So if you haven't seen it, you may want to check it out.
Thank you. And I'm finished if no one has anyone, but I want to talk to the people who were going to present the CFAS symposium at ESPRA, and just to get some feelings about whether I want to write to them today and tell them what our options are. But Jill has something to say.
Just want to thank you, Ed, because you have been juggling a lot and you didn't get thanked.
Thank you, Jill. Thank you. How come I can't mute you?
I have special powers.
Jill, what were you saying? I couldn't hear it. There was somebody else was talking. What were you saying?
John.
Here's a round of applause for Ed.
Thank you. Thank you. Goodbye. All right. Yeah. If Christy, Scott, Jan, and Mike can stay on for a minute to like just get your feelings. So I'm going to write to them today or tomorrow and see what's going on. Thank you all. Bye now.
Bye, everyone.
For now.